Greetings. I look forward to getting to read another chapter to you. I have been busy around the property using a chainsaw and cutting wood and doing lots of work to keep everything in good shape. Father, thank you that I have this time with kids and grandkids to read to them, not because it's a particularly spiritual reading, but because it is reading that makes life delightful and enjoyable and helps us to get a glimpse, a little bit of insight into how others live their lives, what they do, but especially the relationships between people and with their animals. So we give you thanks, Lord, for this time together in Jesus' name. Amen. So we are reading James Herriot's All Creatures Great and Small together. We are going to be reading chapter 9 from a book that was published by St. Martin's Press in 1972. Okay, so chapter 9. First, please, I called as I looked into the waiting room. There was an old lady with a cat in a cardboard box, two small boys trying to keep hold of a rabbit, and somebody I didn't recognize at first. Then I remembered it was Soames. When it was his turn, he came into the surgery, but he was a vastly different character from the one I knew. He wore an ingratiating smile. His head bobbed up and down as he spoke. He radiated anxiety to please, and the most interesting thing was that his right eye was puffed and closed and surrounded by an extensive area of bluish-black flesh. "I hope you don't mind me coming to see you, Mr. Elliot," he said. "The fact is, I have resigned my position with his lordship and am looking for another post. I was wondering if you and Mr. Farnham would put in a word for me if you heard of anything." I was too astonished at the transformation to say much. I replied that we would do what we could, and Soames thanked me effusively and bowed himself out. I turned to Siegfried after he had gone. "Well, what do you make of that?" "Oh, I know all about it," Siegfried looked at me with a wry smile. "Remember I told you he was working one or two shady sidelines up there, selling a few bags of corn or 100 weight of fertilizer here and there? It's all mounted up, but it didn't last. He got a bit careless and he was out on his ear before he knew what had happened." "And how about the lovely black eye?" "Oh, he got that from Tommy. You must have seen Tommy when you were there. He was the horseman." My mind went back to that uncomfortable night and to the quiet chap holding the horse's head. "I remember him. Big fat chap?" "Yes, he's a big lad, and I'd hate to have him punch me in the eye. Soames gave him a hell of a life, and as soon as Tommy heard about the sacking, he paid a visit just to settle the score." I was now comfortably settled into the way of life in Scaledale House. At first, I wondered where Tristan fitted into the setup. Was he supposed to be seeing practice or having a holiday, working or what? But it soon became clear that he was a factotum who dispensed and delivered medicines, washed the cars, answered the phone, and even in an emergency went to a case. At least, that was how Siegfried saw him, and he had a repertoire of tricks aimed at keeping him on his toes, like returning unexpectedly or bursting into a room in the hope of catching him doing nothing. He never seemed to notice the obvious fact that the college vacation was over and Tristan should have been back there. I came to the conclusion over the next few months, that Tristan must have had some flexible arrangement with the college authorities because, for a student, he seemed to spend a surprising amount of time at home. He interpreted his role rather differently than his brother, and, while resident in Derby, he devoted a considerable amount of his acute intelligence to the cause of doing as little as possible. Tristan did, in fact, spend much of his time sleeping in a chair. When he was left behind to dispense when we went out on our rounds, he followed an invariable procedure. He half-filled a 16-ounce bottle with water, added a few drachmas of chlorodyne and a little ipecacuanha, pushed the cork in, and took it through to the sitting room to stand by his favorite chair. It was a wonderful chair for his purpose, old-fashioned and high-backed with wings to support the head. He would get out his daily mirror, light a woodbine, and settle down till sleep overcame him. As Siegfried rushed in on him, he grabbed the bottle and started to shake it madly, inspecting the contents at intervals. Then he went through the dispensary, filled up the bottle, and labeled it. It was a sound, workable system, but it had one big snag. He never knew whether it was Siegfried or not when the door opened, and often I walked in and found him lying in the chair, staring up with startled, sleep-blurred eyes while he agitated his bottle. Most evenings found him sitting on a high stool at the bar counter of the Drover's Arms. conversing effortlessly with the barmaid. At other times, he would be out with one of the young nurses from the local hospital, which seemed to regard as an agency to provide him with female company. All in all, he managed to lead a fairly full life. Saturday night, 10:30 p.m., and I was writing up my visits when the phone rang. I crossed my fingers and lifted the receiver. "Hello, Harriet speaking." "Oh, it's you, is it?" growled a dour voice in broadest Yorkshire. "Well, I want Mr. Farnan." "I'm sorry, Mr. Farnan is out. Can I help you?"
"Well, hope so, but I'd far rather have your boss. This is Sims of Beale Close."
"Oh, no, please no, not Beale Close on a Saturday night, miles up in the hills at the end of a rough lane with about 8 gates." "Yes, Mr. Sims, and what is the trouble?"
"I'll tell you, there is some trouble, dude, and all. I have a grand big show us here, all the 17 hands. He's cut himself badly on the hind leg just above the hock. I want him stitched immediately."
"Glory be, above the hock. What a charming place to have to stitch a horse. Unless he's very quiet, this is going to be a real picnic. How big is the wound, Mr. Sims?"
"Big? It's a girt big thing. About a foot long and bleeding like L. And this oss is as wick as an eel. Could kick a fly's eye out. I can't get near him nohow. Goes straight up wall when he sees anybody. But I got to tell you, I had him to the blacksmith the other day, and the feller was dead scared of him. Twilt girt oss he is."
"Oh, Mr. Sims, be all close, and you're twiltin' girt oss.
Well, I'll be along straight away. Try to have some men handy, just in case we have to throw him."
"Throw him? Throw him? You never throw this oss. He'd kill you first.
Anyways, I have no men here, so you'll have to manage on your own. I know Mr. Farnham wouldn't want a lot of men to help him."
"Oh, lovely, lovely. This is going to be one for the diary." "Very well. I'm leaving now, Mr. Sims."
"Oh, I nearly forgot. My road got washed away in the floods yesterday. You have to walk the last mile and a half. So get a move on, and don't keep me waiting all night."
In my mind, I'm thinking, this is just a bit much.
"Look here, Mr. Sims. I don't like your tone. I said I would leave now, and I will get there as soon as I can."
"You don't like my tone, eh?
Well, I don't like useless young apprentices practicing on my good stock, so I don't want no cheek from you. You know not about the job, any road."
That finally does it. "Now listen to me, Mr. Sims. If it wasn't for the horse sake of the horse, I'd refuse to come out at all. Who do you think you are anyway? If you ever try to speak to me like that again..."
Now, Jim, get a good grip on yourself. Take it easy, old boy. You'll blast a blood vessel if you go on like this."
"Who the devil?"
Jim, calm yourself down now. That temper yours, you know, you'll really have to watch it."
Tristan, where are you speaking from?"
"The kiosk outside the Drovers. 5 pints inside me and feeling a bit puckish. Thought I'd give you a ring."
Tristan, but I'll murder you one of these days if you don't stop this game. It's putting years on me. Now and again, it isn't so bad. But this is the 3rd time this week."
But this was about by far the best, Jim. It was really wonderful. When you started drawing yourself up to your full height, it nearly killed me. Oh, I wish you could have heard yourself." He trailed off into helpless laughter.
And then my feeble attempts at retaliation, creeping, trembling into some lonely phone box.
"Is that young Mr. Farnan?"
In a guttural croak.
"Well, this is Tilson of High Woods. I want you to come out here immediately. I have a terrible case of..."
"Excuse me for interrupting, Jim, but is there something the matter with your tonsils?"
"Oh, good. Well, go on with what you're saying. Oh, that sounds very interesting."
"There was only one time when I was not on the receiving end. It was Tuesday, my half day, and at 11:30 a.m. a call came in. An eversion of the uterus in a cow. This is the tough job in country practice, and I felt the usual chill. It happens when the cow, after calving, continues to strain until it pushes the entire uterus out and hangs down as far as the animal's hocks. It is a vast organ and desperately difficult to replace, mainly because the cow, having once got rid of it, doesn't want it back. And in a straightforward contest between man and beast, the odds were very much on the cow. The old practitioners, in an effort to get even things up a bit, used to sling the cow up by its hind limbs, and the more inventive among them came up with all sorts of contraptions like the uterine valise, which was supposed to squeeze the organ into smaller bulk, but the result was usually the same, hours of backbreaking work. The introduction of the epidural anesthetic made everything easier by removing sensation from the uterus and preventing the cow from straining. But for all that, the words calf bed out coming over the line were guaranteed to wipe the smile off any vet's face. I decided to take Tristan in case I needed a few extra pounds of push. He came along but showed little enthusiasm for the idea. He showed still less when he saw the patient, a very fat shorthorn lying quite unconcerned in her stall. Behind her, a bloody mass of uterus afterbirth, muck and straw spilled over into the channel. She wasn't at all keen to get up, but after we had done a bit of shouting and pushing at her shoulder, she rose to her feet, looking bored. The epidural space was difficult to find among the rolls of fat, and I wasn't sure if I had injected all the anesthetic into the right place. I removed the afterbirth, cleaned the uterus, and placed it on a clean sheet by the farmer and his brother. They were frail men, and it was all they could do to keep the sheet level. I wouldn't be able to count on them to help me much. I nodded to Tristan. We stripped off our shirts, tied clean sacks around our waists, and gathered the uterus in our arms. It was badly engorged and swollen, and it took us just an hour to get it back. There was a long spell at the beginning when we made no progress at all, and the whole idea of pushing the enormous organ through a small hole seemed ludicrous, like trying to thread a needle with a sausage. Then there were a few minutes when we thought we were doing famously, only to find we were feeding the thing down through a tear in the sheet. Siegfried once told me he had spent half a morning trying to stuff a uterus up a cow's rectum. What really worried him, he said, was that he nearly succeeded. And at the end, when hope was fading, there was the blissful moment when the whole thing began to slip inside and incredibly disappeared from sight. Somewhere halfway through, we both took a breather at the same time and stood panting, our faces almost touching. Tristan's cheeks were pretty patterned with a spouting artery had sprayed him. I was able to look deep in his eyes, and I read there a deep distaste for the whole business. Lathering myself in the bucket and feeling the ache in my shoulders and back, I looked over at Tristan. He was pulling his shirt over his head as though it cost him the last of his strength. The cow, chewing contentedly at a mouthful of hay, had come best out of the affair. Out in the car, Tristan groaned. Ugh, I'm sure that sort of thing isn't good for me. I feel as though I've been run over by a steamroller. Oh, what a life this is at times. After lunch, I rose from the table. I'm off to Broughton now, Tris, and I think I'd better mention you. You may not have seen the last of that cow. These bad cases sometimes recur, and there's a chance that little lot may come out again. If it does, it's all yours because Siegfried won't be back for hours, and nothing's going to stop me from having my half day. For once, Tristan's sense of humor failed him. He became haggard. He seemed to age suddenly. Oh, he groaned. Don't even talk about it. I'm all in. Another session like that would kill me. And on my own. It would be the end of me, I tell you. Ah, well, I said sadistically. Try not to worry. It may never happen. It was when I saw the phone box about 10 miles along the Broughton Road that the thought struck me. I slowed down and got out of the car. I wonder if I could do it just once. Inside the box, inspiration was strong in me. I wrapped my handkerchief over the mouthpiece, dialed the practice number, and when I heard Tristan on the line, I shouted at the top of my voice, "Are you the young fella that put the cow's calf back in this morning?" "Yes, I'm one of them," tension sprang into Tristan's voice. "Why? Is there something wrong?" "Hey, there's something wrong," I bawled. "She's putting it out again." Out again. Out again. All of it. He was almost screaming. It's a terrible mess. Pouring blood and about twice the size it was this morning. You'll have some job with her." There was a long silence, and I wondered if he had fainted. Then I heard him again, hoarse but resolute. "Very well, I'll come straight away." There was another pause. Then he spoke again, almost in a whisper. Is it out completely?" I broke down then. There was a wistful quality about the words which defeated me. A hint of a wild hope that the farmer may have been exaggerating, that there might be only a piece peeping out. I began to laugh. I would have liked to toy with my victim a little longer, but it was impossible. I laughed louder and took my handkerchief from the mouthpiece so that Tristan could hear me. I listened for a few seconds to the frenzied swearing at the other end, then gently replaced the receiver. It would probably never happen again, but it was sweet. Very sweet. Love you guys, and I will talk to you the next time we read a chapter together.